This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 440, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 440. My name is Connor, and joining me are Paul Montgomery.
Hello.
And Jeff Flanagan. Josh Flanagan.
Damn it.
Josh cannot. Jeff. John Flanagan. Josh Flanagan. We are iFanboy. We like comics.
Let's see him show up for a show when he's just tweeting from E3 for 9 years straight.
Every week we read a bunch
of
comics.
I'll be out next week.
What?
It's true. He's not going to be here next weekend.
Yeah, it was a joke.
I don't read the emails. One of us picks the best book they read. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book on this here show, along with other comics, other topics of interest, fun stuff. Sometimes just goofy nonsense, but we don't make promises. Before we get to the show, quick reminder and a warning, it's a review show, so we'll be talking about the books that came out and the stories behind the covers. So if you haven't read them yet, you don't want to be spoiled, pause the show and come back when the coast is clear and the bullets have stopped flying. Josh, while you're still on the show, you had the pick of the week.
I thought for a second we have to talk about
the he's got a good hour. He's all right.
We're going to have to talk about the stories behind the covers. And I was like, I don't know why they did that cover like that. Should I have called someone?
I thought you had. Your email.
Why did you?
We changed the format.
Why did you lay it out like this? Yeah. Why'd you pick that colorist? The pick of the week is Royals Masters of War. Number 5 of 6. There's one more to go, and you can tell that when you're reading this. I gotta tell you, from a perfect storm timing standpoint, there really was no other choice. It's the first book I read this week, and I thought, well, that's gonna be the pick of the week, and here's why. As some of you may know, it was the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion a few days ago, or when you listened to this a little while ago, and it just so happened that on that day, I started rewatching Band of Brothers sort of while I was working, and I'd gotten through 2 episodes. The second episode is, of course, the D-Day landing. And I was like, oh shit, it's D-Day. What's that? Put me in a mood. Then Connor told me to start watching the World Wars. The World Wars. So I was watching that. There's another thing going on. And I started reading this, and I was like, well, there's nothing's going to beat that to me. But and also, it's not a great week.
Well, also, you have previously called this your favorite DC book.
Yeah, I'm loving this.
And we all, I believe, Paul, are you still reading this?
Yes. Yeah, I was the one you guys should check this out.
Listen, the record is unclear.
No, I read it the first week.
I read it the first week, too, and I said, guys, make sure you read this.
I was reading it, is what I'm saying. Maybe you told him. I don't know.
I told Connor, at least.
The record's unclear. The point is,
we both told Connor.
The point is, we've all been really enjoying it. It's been really good. And this is another fine issue. This is the story of The royals, who are the royal bloodlines, the kings and queens and princes and princesses of Europe, who all have superpowers imbued from their royal blood, and also of Asia.
Basically an alternate history of the world, World War II specifically, where everything that happens in here sort of fits into what happened to real events, but with this other overlay.
The royals are like Superman. They have powers and they go out.
But then you might ask, well, wouldn't the war just be over because the superheroes would go in and stop everything? No, because they have this agreement that they're not going to engage and just let the people do the fighting.
But as we have to tell a story, when there is an agreement, when there is a gun, it must be shot. For those of you theater students out there. And such is the case, and the royals get involved, and that's what we've been watching for a while, and they're messed up. This is very close. Like, it feels like I'm reading like historical authority. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like. It has that kind of tone very much, and it's very melodramatic. And then at the same time, like, all of this stuff is interweaved with actual things. Like, there's a bit in here about. It's very quick, but they're flying over and taking pictures of Calais, which is the French port, 50 miles off the coast of England. And the thing about D-Day was they tried to fool. There was all these huge
maneuvers. They didn't try,
maneuvers.
They did it.
Right, yeah. I mean, there was all these huge maneuvers, fake cardboard armies and tanks and things like that. They were all designed to make Germany think that they were going to land at Calais instead of Normandy, which worked because it was a complete surprise when they showed up at Normandy that day. But it's just there was like a nice little touch for me was that little one-off of that. They didn't really explain it. You kind of either had to know it or you didn't. And that's fine. I as a person who really likes reading the history, I really like that bit. But then they've got, Churchill's in this and they kind of refer to Hitler, but he's like much less of a major player in this. They're like, oh, that maniac Hitler's screwing things up because – like where the power lies is sort of in dispute, the royals have the power, but they've sort of chosen not to use it or they do. And there's all sorts of neat things going on. Then the Russians are complete wild card, I guess, in that sense.
I think it'd be very easy to make like super Hitler They very wisely don't do that.
Well, he's not royal. He's a colonist.
Of course. Yeah. They play by the rules, but I could see someone saying, well, but Hitler's
a lesser book.
A plot point in this issue in particular, and the main I think dramatic focus hasn't been the war. It's been the war between the royals themselves, and not even the physical war. It's been the fight between the two brothers, the two princes of England. One of them is very gung ho about fighting the war. The other one just wants to drink and screw and not deal with the commoners. And
the one who's going to be king,
right? And their father, who's disapproving, and their sister, who they once again there's a weird incestual relationship. There's been too many of those this year, but. And this is where it all comes to a head. But also, there's a reference here with how, there's been a deal made that they're going to end the war. That England is going to flee. The royals are going to flee England, go back to Germany where they came from, because the German royal line, and this happened in reality, the German royal line and the English royal line overlapped, and so they're going back. They're going back to Germany to where their family is from.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was part of the, they're actually the German royals. If you think about it.
But, I mean, the Kaiser was I think either like a grandson of Victoria, which sort of leads into the events of World War One, leading to World War Two. Really interesting stuff.
Yeah. So the character stuff and the interfamily drama is really interesting. I think if you like Game of Thrones, if you like Lazarus, which also has incestuous relationships, but even more so, it's just about the family dynamics and the power plays.
And this is other sort of really like this, like the one prince is super into his sister, like way too much, but he's also into being like the hero and wants to, he's the one who charged into the war, who became part of it. And then, the princess is basically possessed by one of the German royals. And so the whole time, like she's talking with the voice of someone else because she's a psychic and they tried to use her to get to him and it backfired. And she's trying the whole time to, leverage, demands basically for information that she knows, because she keeps saying she knows who the spy is. And then we find out at the end who the spy is. I think that is that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And, you know, it's the fifth of six issues, so you have this is the issue for the big twist reveal or whatever, something like that. And this is where we get in this issue. We find out who the spy is, and then the spy ends up killing at least one of the main characters. Mm-hmm. And I know there was a spoiler warning, but a lot of people aren't reading this, so I'm going to let that one go.
Yeah.
And I love the character dynamics of this. I also love the art in it as well.
Oh, it's perfect. It's literally perfect.
Like, you need someone who can do these big action sequences, but also great character drama, but also really great World War II era equipment, planes and tanks. And, you know, the battles, the stuff in the battlefield has to look authentic. Otherwise, this whole story falls in on itself. And Simon Colby does really wonderful.
I don't know equipment. What it is about British artists, but they seem to have, you know, if you think about like Chris Weston or.
We should also mention Gary Erskine, who's a great artist in himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I didn't even think I knew that. Gary Erskine would be another example I would have used of somebody who can draw stuff like this. And like guys who came out of particularly like 2000 AD, like they seem to do this stuff really well. I don't know if it's part of art school. Like you just spend one semester.
And now
just,
we're going to draw Sherman tanks.
You just draw the Spitfire over and over and over again.
I love the cover on this one. And it's a nice bookend with the cliffhanger. Well, not really a cliffhanger, but the last page.
It's a cliffhanger.
Well, the cliffhanger comes a little bit before. That last page.
Multiple cover. Cliffs, multiple hangs.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, just
cover is wonderful.
Yeah, this is just one of those, that penultimate issue that has like everything built up to it. It's sort of full of intrigue and drama, and there's action, and you're like, well, everything is going to happen, you know, now, and everything, you know, is going to hinge on what happens in this one. It was just super exciting, and it's just in the end of the day, like it was all just well crafted and well woven. And you know, I'm going to be upset when it's over, but it's a really nice miniseries.
Honestly, I wasn't paying attention to how many issues this was and what issue number this was, so I didn't know that the next issue was the last one. I think they've got the potential to go even further than this.
Or you go back
if they wanted to, if they could.
You mentioned Lazarus before. Much like Lazarus, I would love to read a novel of this world.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, really sort of that allows them to really go deep into the story and maybe even do the history. You know, I think it'd be really interesting. It's a great world they've built. And granted, it's mostly the real world, but the historical fiction aspect of it is really interesting.
But it fits so well as an overlay. Like it's just one step further. This bloodline that everybody was trying to keep, the royals, because they were supposedly chosen by God and superior than us, you know. Well, the reason is because they have these superpowers.
I think the more there's alluded, the weaker they got, right? I mean, that was
plot point.
And also, I like the – this wasn't an issue, but I like the Americans doing it. We don't have a royal line, so we had fake soldiers, and they all got killed.
Yeah.
It's just been a really great series. We've talked about it a lot before, but it's worth reiterating every time.
Yeah. So it was a good week. I was glad that I got – you know, there's only six issues of these. I'm glad that one of them got to be pick of the week, because it's really been one of the highlights of comics for me over the past few months.
Yeah, I'm glad we got to highlight this.
Definitely. So I don't know that I have ever – read a comic book that I think so perfectly encapsulated the personality of the writer. and I'm talking about Shudder number 3, written by Joe Keating, with art by Leila DeLuca. And I don't mean to shortchange her at all, but I've known Joe for some time, and I've known his work. And this is just this pastiche of imagination and sort of foreign comics and all of this stuff at the same time. And I don't even know what to make of it. It's good and I enjoyed it, but it's very unique.
It's very out there. It's like an adult's version of Axe Cop. Like, it's just like throwing stuff at the wall. I mean, there were lion gangsters last issue. This issue, we got to talk about the opening sequence.
Yeah, it's great.
Which the artist really outdid herself here. And it's this send up of Richard Scarry.
Is he down?
Yeah, those books, and you know, the police character, the policeman character, looks like the cat from the Richard Scarry things.
I read all those books. I haven't had
the Lederhosen, like, right?
Yeah, Huckle.
There you go. And
Loli the worm.
Loli's the worm, right? But it has arms in this.
Yeah, well,
I don't know what that's like. It looks like a salamander or something. But basically, it's this very cute little picture book told in these. It's in these grids.
It's 16 panels, is it?
Okay, I don't have it in front of me. And basically is a hitman. If you imagine one of the Richard Scarry characters is a reformed hitman who is going through a divorce and needs the money to pay for alimony and everything, agrees to go on one last kill. And the
whenever
kill
anyone
is the cliffhanger
offers you
from
one
the previous
last
issue.
Anything, you need to turn it down.
It's like, and that is a giant bomb gun. And luckily, there are two bombs. So he fires off the bomb that we see careening towards the apartment building at the end of issue two. And then that crashes and explodes. Doesn't hit the target that we're looking for. And then he's like, why did I do this again? And shoots himself. Imagine a worm shooting himself with a giant gun as big as like a motorbike.
So when I first started this issue, I thought, you know, I don't know the rules of this world at all.
No.
There's the black and white cat thing that's alive, and there's
the cat clock with the clock tail.
Right. The butler that's made of bones and those hitmen. And then by the end of it, I was like, eh, whatever. I don't care. I don't know the rules. It doesn't bother me. But I think a lot of it has to do with the art team of Leila DeLuca and Owen Gianni. I think they're just wonderful. That first two-page sequence that Paul mentioned, the 16-panel grids, opening up to this giant two-page spread, just chock full of the big explosion page, chock full of detail and great, a really great perspective on the shot. And she's great. She's really, really good. She draws all kinds of there's also a shot of some weird fox creature riding a triceratops right. With a bloody sword.
With a katana, basically.
It's an artistic tour de force, is what it is.
The flashback sequences are done in a completely different style, too. It just very easily signals that you're not, you know, in this time and space that you were, and you're going back and the colors changing, the, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just this young woman adventurer, explorer.
I'm hard-pressed to give anyone sort of log line in this book.
Right. You know,
well, at the end of the day, yeah.
I'm just trying to think of some kind of through line for that.
I don't know. But it's crazy. It's full of imagination, and I think...
It's about a lot of things that Joe Keating likes. I know that much. And he likes a lot of cool things. So that's probably not
This bad. Is a guy who did a Hulk miniseries based on the films of the French New Wave. So that's the kind of imagination that you're dealing with. That's the kind of aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And he's just having fun. And that, you know, that fun is catching.
Yeah. You're right, though. I couldn't pitch this to you.
Now, one of our favorite New 52 books, was at least for some of us, was OMAC. Yeah. It ran for 8 issues. 2 of the 8 were picks of the week. And the OMAC team has returned with Infinity Man and the Forever People. It's written by Dan DiDio and Keith Giffen, with art by Scott Koblish and Keith Giffen. And I loved it. I mean, there's things about it we'll get to in a second, but overall, right. it's the energy and the feel of OMAC. It's not exactly OMAC again, but it's that energy and feel, and it feels like that world. And
it feels so antithetical to hear you say that a book written by Dan DiDio is a book like that.
I know. That's
because
the thing.
Of the terror that one has wrought.
Yeah. I mean, I'm one of the ones who loved OMAC, and I missed it when it was gone. And I was going to read this anyway, but I got so many recommendations to read this. Like, make sure you read Infinity Man and the Forever People. Of course, I love the New Gods, and I love, you know, I love anything Kirby that I've read. Unfortunately, I've never read the Forever People. Mm-hmm. I hadn't gotten to that stuff yet. So this was new to me. So basically the idea, if you're not familiar, is you've got a bunch of New Gods, so citizens of that world. And it's so the New Gods aren't just, you know, Mr. Miracle and Orion and, you know, Darkseid and all them. It's everybody from that new Genesis world and Apocalypse, right? And
yeah,
they have a little group, a little contingent that goes to Earth basically sort of as envoys for New Genesis, and they're there to help, you know, and enrich the Earth, because they come from a perfect society, right? At least New Genesis is, and they just want to help. And so they're sort of it's a little bit condescending, but they're you know they're good
they're
enough benefactors,
so you know whatever,
right?
As long as they're not going to eat us,
that's right. And it's very much a tribute to Kirby. And there's even a line in here. Let's see.
Like, oh, the robot. The robot.
There's a, like an artificial intelligence. Yeah. The name is Kirby, but then also, where is it?
I'll tell you while you're looking for that. Yeah. I will say one thing. Keith Giffen never really decided, I'm going to spend a lot of time on this particular layout. He's got four moves, and that's what you're getting.
Yeah, there was one page where, and there's a couple of nitpicks I have about the issue. One is that they go to this group of grad students basically goes through a boom tube, and nitpick number one is I hate the boom tube in this. It's just like a little gold box and not the cool Kirby hand thing. I hate the boom tube design. But they go to Earth to they run into Infinity Man, who lives in Venice, California, which we'll get to in a second. But then they go to his house, and it's supposed to be super.
That's
impressive.
Not Infinity Man.
That's not Infinity Man.
Infinity Man hasn't showed up yet. That's
oh right. That's
Big Bear
Big Bear.
Right.
Some of the names have been transposed from the old versions, which is strange. Beautiful Dreamer is not Dreamer Beautiful. It's weird. They go to his house, and they're all impressed by it. We never pull back to see the house.
Mm. That's true.
Well,
yeah.
As I'm just sort of flipping through it right now, there's a lot of promise in the art that isn't fulfilled. That first page, which is sort of like hanging out in the cosmos and the boom tube is moving around or whatever, and there's that big shot of the crazy city in the sky, New Genesis, I assume. Then you go to the next page, and it's a two-page spread. Again, it's like this landscape like that is just – it's screaming at you that's Kirby. I mean like the huge overarching shapes, and then that panel at the bottom of whoever it is running away from the panel. You just sort of see the back of them and their foot. And then after that, it's just a series of four and six panel pages of faces and medium shots. It really like you're if you stop paying attention in the beginning, you go, oh, this is going to be a super artistic tour de force, which is a word you used in the last book. Sorry. And then as you keep going, like all of a sudden the layouts become super boring. And I haven't read it. I'm just sort of critiquing.
It's not necessarily a bad thing. We've talked in the past about people who are just sort of solid storytellers who could tell a story, and that's basically what Keith Giffen does here. It's interesting when you're tributing one of the most dynamic artists of all time.
And especially when you're leaving New Genesis and we're evidently going to be spending most of our time on Earth. So you have this one opportunity to show these, you know, grand vistas on New Genesis and everything and get really Kirby'd out.
And you could, but the thing is that there's no shortage of Kirby work that is going to look kind of boring. Like he did a lot of stuff that was really great, but he also, you know, this is a guy who did something like 15 pages a week.
I really like the art in this. I do too. A critique of it. But
I found the line. It's Kirby is my communal reconstruction bio engine. He's responsible for building and maintaining this environment. Without him, none of this would be possible.
Right.
Without Kirby. None of this would be happening.
And do you know why they can get away with saying that while the other company can't?
There's no lawsuit.
No, because Kirby got royalties for this stuff.
Right, but there's also no law. That's what there's
right.
no lawsuit.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, DC's covered because they can say, this is from Jack Kirby. He got a part of it. Whatever that deal is, you know, nobody got hosed on this. The whole point, like, this is just, like I said, a history thing. Like, but when they needed bad guys for the superpowers line, you know, they said we're going to do them with the New Gods and Darkseid, and they gave Kirby a check for it, and you know he never forgot that. Like that was a really big deal to him, and so that's how you feel good about reading the stuff, I guess.
I really enjoyed the Venice joke because I live right near Venice Beach, and the Forever people show up and they're worried about blending in, and they're like, "Don't worry about it, it's Venice. No one's going to even notice," which is absolutely 100% true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If these people walk through Windward Avenue, no one would even blink an eye. But I liked it. It was super fun. If you were an OMAC fan, all 8,000 wonderful people of you, then you should check it out.
This is something where... go ahead.
No, I was moving on to the next one.
That's fine.
I wonder... She-Hulk number 5 feels like a book that should not exist. The whole series kind of feels that way. Like, are they where they're publishing it kind of thing, which the joke we always make, but... The normal art. This is a fill-in issue with a fill-in artist, and not a fill-in
Ron,
issue.
It's Ron Wimberly, yeah.
And so it's not the normal art, which the normal art in and of itself is pretty unstandard superhero fare. This is like times 10.
Yeah.
And I loved it, but I'm reading it going, do they know? Do they know what's happening in this issue? Because it's crazy.
I would write scenes like She-Hulk and Shocker talking on a couch all day if I was allowed to.
You don't even see Shocker in full costume either.
No.
You see him with the gloves on. For most of it, you don't even see him with the mask on. You're sitting there like, who's that guy? And you only know it's Shocker you know, through context of the story, and then the gloves on his hands, you know, the gauntlets.
I actually went back, took me a couple of pages, and I was like, Herman. Oh, right, because he's in the other book. So yep. That helped. The other book that I can't imagine.
I couldn't tell at first if the exaggerated limbs were like a story element or just an art element.
I think it's an art.
I think it's an art element at first.
For the first time Tiger's hand got really big, I was like, whoa, what happened?
Yeah.
Then I realized it was happening all the time, and I realized it was just an artistic choice. But like, this is like extremely un-Marvel-like.
Yeah, right away we're in the hallway of an apartment complex, and there's this sort of fisheye effect, the way the limbs are sort of contorted. So yes. we're looking at this distorted view. And I could see that as, you know, you're looking through the department keyhole or the door or the eye hole, and but then that continues throughout the entire story, and because it's consistent, I kind of liked it. Sometimes the backgrounds are a little sparse for just how crazy the figures are, which is a complaint I've heard leveled at like Travel Foreman art and Animal Man. So I could kind of see. So there's some pages that worked really well for me. Some of them
I don't really mind it. I didn't even notice, to be honest with you, because the figures are so crazy that I wouldn't even want a background because it would take away.
Tigra was drawn strange. I was like, it doesn't feel like it looks like Tigra.
Right.
And she was wearing like a weird
bikini.
It was like a bra from the 60s. Like, it's weird. And also, she has a rooftop apartment with a pool and a jungle gym of some kind.
Right.
A jumping cube.
Well,
cat.
All the talk has been about the art, but I really like the story, actually. There's this phantom lawsuit that they found filed that named a bunch of old West Coast Avengers as defendants. So you've got Tigra and Hellcat and She-Hulk and Dr. Druid, who's no longer with us. I say like he's a real person. And they've all been named in this lawsuit, and She-Hulk's trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And it turns out every time somebody's told the lawsuit, they get triggered into this homicidal rage, and I liked it a lot. It's not a one shot, it's still going.
I think what's really cool about it is that, like, I know that Charles is an attorney, you know, in his other life, and I feel like this is a real this to me feels like the kind of like the attorney equivalent of the dream where you don't have pants on. Is that there's a lawsuit out there that has affected you, but you don't know about it.
Or you go into a giant storage room and there's just papers everywhere. And
like you can't learn anything more about it. Like, it feels like a bad dream. Wait, I'm named in this lawsuit. Well, this might be something. Well, don't worry about it. And every time you open a corner, like, whatever it is just doesn't make sense. Like, it's all, I mean, obviously, like, it doesn't feel like a dream in this, but like, sort of the structure is like that. Like, it just keeps getting worse. That feels like lawyer paranoia. Which I think is really kind of cool authentic.
He certainly imbues the story with a lot of authentic details.
That last
without it
my
getting too bogged
issue.
Down in that,
yeah,
right. So it doesn't feel like a David E. Kelly story, but it does feel very real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this must be a thing that happens.
I would challenge anyone at Marvel, and it's not really an issue in this particular issue of All New Invaders. This is number 6. But I was thinking about it as I was looking through the other issues, that to tell me that the Captain America costume looks good.
Yeah, no, I mean you're not gonna. Yeah,
he's on the cover a little bit, but he looks better on the cover than he looks in the interior.
Well, the first thing that I wanted to bring up with this is look at that cover. That's a good cover, right?
Really good cover, yeah.
Look who drew it.
Land, interesting.
That's a Greg Land cover. That's the greatest looking Greg Land cover we've seen in forever. Wow. I went back.
It's not a style that he normally draws in.
Look how cool Namor looks.
Yeah,
it's a great Greg Land cover, and I want to give Greg Land credit for drawing a great cover.
Very good.
I wanted to take that time.
Look at you, it's like fair and balanced on iFanboy.
Thoughtful of you. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely 100% right. That is a great cover by Greg Land, and I wish he'd drawn the interior. That nothing against Mark Lamming, but I like the cover quite a bit.
Mark Lamming, you may remember as the guy who stepped in on the second arc, and I think all the arcs after Gabriel Hardman on the Planet of the Apes books,
mm-hmm. and a very similar style.
This issue is good art wise. I like that cover quite a bit.
I really like the interior art actually.
How do we feel about the red? This is a red. I'm sorry, red. This is Human Torch.
Original Human Torch
issue where he's now part of S.H.I.E.L.D. At the end of the last issue, he joined S.H.I.E.L.D. with Captain America. That's where the costume bugged me. But anyway, Well, how do you feel about his red version of the costume here?
I thought it's unusual that they would have taken the time to make that.
I kind of like it, honestly.
I mean, I don't mind it. Like, it works. It's kind of cool. I've always liked spending time fictionally with Jim Hammond. Yeah. I really liked, I don't know, this just doesn't feel like all the rest of the Marvel comics. It feels like something older in a cool way, and just like this kind of story. And I mean, this is something James Robinson does, is that he doesn't really write comics of now. He writes sort of timeless comics that sort of encapsulate a bunch of different eras of comics, I think. And, you know, I thought the ending was really intriguing. Like, I like how this, like, she doesn't seem to have gone crazy, this Radiance girl. Like, there's something going on.
She's not crazy. She's now been downloaded to sin. She knows their sin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to avoid all these
things. I like the Radiance character. I got to be honest with you. I'm not a big Human Torch fan. I think he's kind of dull.
Well, I think that's the point. I think he's a cipher for that kind of thing. Like, and it's really like, throw this sort of guy who doesn't know who he is or what he is into the deep end, which is interesting. And like, I you've got that scene of, I would have drawn, this is totally like inside. I would have drawn the psychologist, the S.H.I.E.L.D. psychologist, like differently. I think the way that he's drawn, it makes him look sort of ineffectual, like a bureaucrat or something.
Well, he does
like
look a lot like Coulson.
Yeah.
Who's also in this issue. So at a certain point, I didn't know who I was looking at.
Like, it just, it doesn't remind you, the scene, this is, again, this is going to be inside the three of us, really. The scene reminds me of Alan Arkin on the West Wing, where like he's supposed to be really sly, and I just don't get that out of him visually.
Right.
And I think it would have been cool if it was just done a little differently. That's totally like a note that may or may not matter. It's just a feeling I got out of it, because I really like that scene. I like the setups. I love the history, like the tying what's in happening now to what happened with the invaders. And even if so, if we're not going to have Captain America and Bucky and Namor in every issue, then the things that they did is going to matter to what's going on now.
Right.
I think that's the way to do this, and it's fun.
I just want to go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if we all wore matching jumpsuits, like iFanboy branded matching jumpsuits, what colors would you guys have?
Do they be different colors then?
Well, his is red and Cap's is blue.
Right.
Would yours be plaid?
I think it would have to be. It would have a little like a little tie.
You can be gingham. I'll be plaid.
Oh, yours would be gingham.
No. Me and Ron, a lot of gingham.
It's a lot of gingham.
Yeah, I don't need to. I don't want gingham. I don't. That's not my thing.
I need two more plaids, and I'll have all of them.
He can talk to you about Black Watch forever.
This was good, though. I wasn't excited when I saw the cover and saw his original sin, because I was going to try to avoid all those tie-ins, but I guess I have no choice.
He just found a way to use a little element and make a story.
No, if it's going to work for any characters, it's the Invaders, because they've existed for that long. So these characters could have sinned a long time in the past, although I still have the bad taste in my mouth of the last issue of Original Sin, in which Nick Fury told Bucky he never liked him to begin with, which I was like, really?
But well, we'll see.
Nick Fury or old Nick Fury?
No, old Nick Fury. Before he cut his head off.
Bucky
decapitated him. I never liked you anyway. Cut it off and be done with it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I just like, I'm staring at this page of you know, Namor over the ship.
Yep.
How great is that? On the Pacific Ocean. I want Mark Laming to do either a Namor book or just an old school Invaders book.
I like spending time.
Or anything. I like this art a lot.
I don't ever really get Namor stories, so I like that.
It's true. I really like Namor, but because of that, because he's parsed out so infrequently, like it is actually exciting when he shows up.
Imperious Rex.
I really like him in, like, the way that Namor is written now. Is it really like he could kind of be a bad guy?
Sure. He's
but
been
when
a bad
you
guy.
Write about right, I know. But when you write about him in World War II, when you write about him with the Invaders, like, he's just the surly guy who is on your team.
Yeah.
Stalin.
I like that more.
Is he Stalin?
I don't know.
Well, it's really interesting.
Evil dictator of another country.
Is he a dictator?
Country.
He puts the dick in dictator.
Well, he's royalty.
Yeah.
I did a piece for Marvel.com a while back on Golden Age characters, like forgotten ones. And what's really interesting is Namor, there's a bunch of versions of characters that are similar to Namor, just from other places, not the ocean. Like There's a guy from the sky, like a sky, like a floating city. There's a guy from Lando? Like underground. It seems
the pre-aviator.
And then like rock or Rockman, who just lived from an underground city. And they all, you know, are interested in what's going on the surface during World War II. And they're like, what the hell's wrong with you people? And it's just interesting that Namor is the one that stuck.
Mm-hmm. At first, I was going to feel bad about comparing Namor to Stalin. Side note, he's not a real person. I don't know why I'd feel bad. But
Stalin's
then real. I realized he did bring that giant tidal wave in Manhattan. He probably killed thousands of people. So fuck it. He's Stalin. All right.
You don't come back for that, though. That's the problem with the comics, is that he's come back with it. You know, he's part of the Illuminati. They kept, you know, they're not letting Stalin in there after the pogroms.
Right.
Maybe. I don't know.
Let's take a quick break to mention Amazon, ifanboy.com/Amazon.
It got weird, didn't it?
Is that how you can help us out? You can listen to last week's show for all the caveats for this segment. We're not going to do that again, but ifanboy.com/Amazon is if you're still making Amazon purchases, you can help the show out by going through that link and letting us have a piece of your sale, not coming out of your sale price, but Amazon's pocket. So that is one way you can help us. We really appreciate everyone who does that every day. I do it every day as well. ifanboy.com/registration is a way you can help us also directly by becoming an iFanboy member at $3 a month or $30 a year, as well as donating any amount you like. If you're a crazy billionaire and you want to donate $1 million, we're not going to stop you. Although you might want to let us know, because we're going to have to talk to our accountants and there's going to be tax implications. But still, we'll let you do it. If you like doing that, ifanboy.com/registration.
So we talked last time The Walking Dead came out about there being the time jump and the big switch and everything. And this is basically more time spent with them in their new world. We've jumped ahead, I guess, several years indeterminate amount of time, but you know, everyone's much older. And for like a few pages, I was like, I don't know who these people are. And I was like, oh, that's Rick. I'm looking at Rick. Because not everyone's grizzled. They're ungrizzled. And so we're seeing them sort of exist in this world and build a thing up. And of course, as anyone who reads narrative knows, that's a problem. But I really enjoy it. Like, it's one of those things where, like, it's been around a really long time. And to watch them go from place to place and run, and, you know, there's been different situations where they were kind of stable. But at this point, like, it feels like it is permanent, or at least it has been for a good amount of time. And, you know, they keep bringing in new people that we get to meet and look at, and I like the father stuff that's going on, and it's good. It's been a breath of fresh air, of undead fresh air.
But for how long?
He let that war arc go on for 100 issues, or whatever that was. So, but there's also obviously, like, if you look around, you know, there's little piles of tinder everywhere that could light a flame. There's several of them, and so that sort of intrigue is there in all the rosiness. So. It's good, is what I'm saying.
So I wanted to mention a couple of all ages comics that stuck out at me this week. Angry Birds, number one, based on the very popular.
What could possibly be the story here other than frustration?
Well, there's short comics. So there's three little stories in each of these issues, and two
does
of
it
them
use words, or is it just like
it does use words? They do talk, and I think there's going to be like a cartoon or like a movie about the anger, because of course there will be. So it's Jeff Parker did two of them.
He just sold me
with Paco Rodriguez. That's why I was like,
I didn't know that.
And then Cesar Firioli.
I'm listening.
And then Paul Tobin did the other one with Marco Gervasio. And so the three little stories, and they're trifles of little stories, but I look at it as like a puzzle. Like, what the hell do you do with these characters?
Like you can imagine the phone call. Do you want to do Angry Birds?
Right.
Is there like ennui? We learn the backstory of the birds. We get their motivation as to why they are so angry birds.
Not really. I mean, it just reminds me of like a you know, a little 7-minute, you know, like Looney Tune or something. Or it really reminded me of the Barnyard Commandos. That was probably just my generation, and it was sheeps versus pigs, and it was a toy line and a cartoon.
No bird origin story as to why they're angry.
There's a little there's paranoia in the third one, which is a little bit of the monsters are due on Maple Street. Mm-hmm. When the pigs start sending over care packages of candy, they start airdropping these packages of candy, but then they're wrapped in paper.
Smallpox. Smallpox.
And on the paper, it's drawings showing one bird being mean to the other one. and the birds start getting suspicious of each other, and they start infighting instead of fighting the pigs, who are the real enemy.
A couple of weeks ago, I was on a plane,
yeah,
and I was in the middle seat, and I was reading my book or whatever, and I started getting really tired, and I couldn't go to sleep because I was in the middle seat. And the woman on the left of me has a spreadsheet out and her laptop, and she's doing all sorts of work, and the woman on the right is clearly working on some serious business proposal, and I was like, well, I'm going to be between you two playing Star Wars Angry Birds now for a while. And I'm not going to tell you I didn't feel conspicuous, but I played it. I played the whole thing all the way through, the free trial part anyway, because I couldn't buy it because I was on the plane.
Mm-hmm. It's lighthearted and fun. And I think that it's like each one is a little puzzle. And
is there any way that they could overlay the Angry Birds with World War One and or Two? Because I think that would really do something for me.
I think that's in there. I think that's the subtext.
Like the pigs are pretty much the Axis powers, right?
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, the other one is Figment number one. Marvel, since it's now owned by Disney, has been doing some sort of weird, obscure Disney tie-in kind of comics. And this one is based on the character of Figment, who I've never been to a Disney theme park. So apparently he's the mascot for Epcot. What's that, Disney World, Disneyland?
It's Disney World in Florida.
Disney World. It's the one that looks like the Death Star, right? Yes. So Figment is the purple dragon, and he's been around for a while. And then there's the Dreamfinder, who's the scientist. And this story attracted me because I like purple dragons. And also it's drawn by Philippe Andrade, who did an arc of Captain Marvel and did some John Carter comics for Marvel as well. Anyways, beautiful book. And this is the first comic I ever read on my iPad that I just got. And the colors are gorgeous. And the colors are by Jean-Francois Boulay.
Well, you're a color aficionado, so you'll be pretty happy about the iPad purchase because the colors pop.
It's astounding. Yeah,
is that Scotty's colorist?
Might be.
Or is that another French person?
It looks
name?
Like Scotty's. I don't know.
To Josh, all French people are the same.
Similar idea. But anyways,
I love how you're just racking up these.
This is a really great all ages comic, and it's 1910, London, England, and so we're at the tail end of the Victorian era, and the scientist who is a dreamer is tasked with creating a pure energy source. So like, you know, Tony Stark in the first Iron Man, and he decides to create mind Dragons. Energy, and he creates this mental energy, and he starts looking into his memories, and he brings out his imaginary friend from when he was a little kid. And it's this purple dragon named Figment. And by the end of this, he creates this big sort of steampunk engine powered by dreams, daydreams, by his thoughts, his imagination. And it opens up this big rift, this big portal, and he gets sucked inside. And he and Figment are now in the world of imagination. And
is,
looks
if
like
this,
a crazy
if
place.
This,
you
is
and
it a,
me?
Is it a mini?
I'm sure it is.
If it ends with Puff the Magic Dragon and Figment fighting, then I will read it.
That would be kind of cool.
Only if Willy Wonka's there.
And Pete's dragon, and there's just a giant brawl. And then at the end of it, Matthew McConaughey shows up, and he says, Josh?
Wait, hold on. I was trying to think of the one with Sean Connery, so I was in a different. What's that? Which one's?
What?
You know where he's the last dragon? I am the last one.
I don't know
what dragon
you
movie
blew
was
it.
That?
We had a perfect Reign of Fire part, and you just blew it.
Bring it to me, Quinn.
All right, let's talk about X-Men.
Well, it doesn't say. It says it just says number one. It doesn't say one of something.
I am the last one.
All new X-Men 28.
All new X-Men 28 was great. Great Stuart Immonen art, which also looked great on the iPad. And what I liked about this is that we haven't seen. I mean, Professor Xavier
Paul's
has
iPad
played
comic review. From now on.
Professor Xavier has played a role even beyond the grave in a bunch of different books. He's, you know, he's always there. He's all this looming presence, even though he's gone. But here we get to see what it would be like if there was an evil Professor Xavier, and not just his creepy twin sister, but like his, and so his son Xavier, who we met. And the storyline with all the different timelines coming together. He and his, I guess, his brother, Reyes. So that means Xavier.
And Mystique.
And Mystique had a kid.
Unless Xavier and Logan had a kid.
Unless, yeah, exactly. You know? So it was like,
science.
Trying to do the math here, but yeah, so so Mystique and Wolverine had a kid named Rays.
Yes.
And Mystique and Professor Xavier had a kid that he just calls himself Xavier, and it's just a bald guy who looks like Professor Xavier, just a little bit younger. Anyways, they go back into the past, and it's very timely because it's all that great stuff that we loved in Days of Future Past, the movie, and all the weird timeline stuff, and their talk about time travel I thought was really interesting, and it sort of broke Future Beast, like just thinking about all the different timelines. He just went crazy.
I like the little back to future joke. I like the little Back to Future sort of joke with the letter that showed up on a doorstep.
Yeah, exactly.
That was fun. Mm-hmm. It's as mind bending as time travel can be, and as frustrating, it still can be really fun when you play with it the right way. And
I really liked the. So if we screw up, we just go back a little further and do it. You know, it's like, well, it's all those like the like, well, what would the next step be? Well, right. Obviously that would be it. I have one question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is there anybody better than Stuart Immonen at doing this type of book?
No.
It's just not. Like, there's nobody better. These layouts and just like his compositions are just so good.
There's a 2-page spread in here with a Colossus on it, and it's Xavier saying, "I hate you people. That's why I'm doing this." Because young Jean is saying, "Why? Why are you attacking?" Because he's attacking her with mental energy, and because she's even weaker than he expected her to be, because she's so young and hasn't learned how to control her powers yet and how to put up those barriers. Now, and she's like, "Why?" And he says, "Why do people keep asking why? Just because I just hate you people."
I, you know, like all good bad guys, he does have some valid points.
Yes.
A couple of them are like, you know, you killed my dad, you took his money, you took his house, and you took his name off it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you're right. They did. They're
great villains.
The Jean Grey School for Mutants. And I was like, well, they just, you know, I didn't realize they just shit all over Xavier in that moment when they did that. And it didn't occur to me until his crazy son saying it. But, you know, he's got some valid points.
I like both him and I like Ray's too. I like, you know, Ray's like, give me one of the good mutants, one of the ones that I'll really enjoy killing. Get me a Cyclops. I hate that guy.
See, now that is a bit really more sadistic. In a moral gray area that Paul agrees with that. But,
yeah,
you know, I understand.
Mm-hmm. I like the young Cyclops. I like the kid Cyclops off in his own solo book. I don't like adult Cyclops. That's where I'm at now. My dislike of Cyclops is that nuanced. That it's just different iterations of Cyclops I can like and not like.
Okay. Well, those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. You can go to fanboy.com. You can find this show. You can find the comment section. You can talk about these books. You can talk about other books we didn't get a chance to talk about or didn't get a chance to read. And have a good old time talking about comics at fanboy.com. Now, this week there was some news, some rumor in the world of comic book movie and TV shows. And the first bit of news was that Vincent D'Onofrio, the great actor from Law & Order, Criminal Intent, and from Full Metal Jacket, and from
The
Men
Cell.
In Black, and from The Cell, and from all kinds of things, has been cast as Kingpin in the Netflix Daredevil series. I don't believe we talked about the Daredevil casting, or did we? The guy from
No, we didn't.
The guy from BoDark Empire, whose name escapes me, has been cast as Daredevil. The Irish.
What's in the box, man?
Steve Buscemi, Daredevil.
Steve Buscemi was not cast as Daredevil.
Box guy.
And
Irish box guy. Northern Irish box guy.
He was really good on BoDark Empire, so I'm really excited.
He was also in Stardust, the Neil Gaiman movie.
Right.
That was a good movie, but I saw it once many years ago, and I don't remember.
I did as well. Not as good as all the killing he did on BoDark Empire. Sure. Anyway, so far, two actors named, but two really, really strong actors, so this bodes well already.
And, you know, it also points to what characters are going to be involved. We knew that there was going to be a Daredevil. We didn't necessarily know there was going to be a Kingpin. So do you think that they're, you know, leaning more towards doing like a Bendis style Daredevil story?
Let's call it a Frank Miller style.
Frank Miller style? Okay.
let's just watch that now.
Okay.
The real question will be if we hear if there's a Bullseye.
Yeah.
If there'll be a Bullseye.
The thing is, like, bringing Bullseye into it is like they told that story in like the movie. I mean, you know what I mean? Like
Kingpin too.
Kingpin was in the movie too.
Yeah, but yeah. But
there really isn't more to the. Well, that's very reductive. But the Daredevil story, if you're telling one, is Kingpin, Bullseye, and Elektra, and Daredevil. Those four people.
But also, like, Kingpin can be a figure in the background. The story doesn't have to be. That can just be the constant of,
right?
You know, that force in his life that is always there and is significant.
So if you don't want to see Bullseye, who do you want to see?
I've actually really enjoyed Stilt the Man. Owls. I've really enjoyed the Owl stuff lately.
Owl's been great.
And I also think
Kingpin.
No, it's different. But I don't know if those exist in the same time. But I also think like the Purple Man stuff that Bendis did was really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Something like Spot. That.
No. Not that.
I like Spot.
Not that. You know, Lady Bullseye, I think, is the way to go. Where he gets, we should do the Brubaker arc, where he gets the crazy wife, and
do an episode in French.
Oh. Yeah, and it just goes on for fucking years.
French episode. Oh. I like it.
French episode's fine. Just no wife anywhere near that.
Mila.
But I just gotta see. I really like the casting. I like Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin. That's really interesting.
I would like to see, because the thing is, he kind of has one of those. He's not really the calm, controlled type.
No.
And so that does lead you to the danger of the Tommy Lee Jones Riddler. No, is it? No, who is
Two-Face.
Tommy Lee
Two-Face.
Jones Two-Face.
Jesus, sorry. Josh. It's embedded in our souls.
I've never,
it's the same
never,
movie.
Down where it hurts. And that's
I've
where Tommy Lee Jones
it.
Two-Face lives.
You've never seen it, really?
I walked out.
Did you really? That's interesting.
Yeah, I did. I walked out, and I never saw it.
I never saw the first Batman.
That movie's great.
Oh, my God.
Same. That better
that
be directed.
Stop doing this to us.
I like. Did you walk away?
I walked.
Yes.
It sounded like you were across the room.
I stumbled away in pain.
I'll watch it. I watched Ghostbusters.
I saw that movie 18 times that summer in a theater.
I watched Ghostbusters.
1989. Every weekend I was there.
I had action figures from it, from the first movie, but I was too young at the time.
There were only three action figures. It was Batman, Joker
and
Bob.
The guy with the beard.
Bob the Goon.
Okay.
Next, you're going to tell me that you don't know who Rick Oley is. I mean, come on.
Knox, give him a grant. Come on, Paul.
Give him a grant. He just wants a grant. You're going to need a long lens.
Why wasn't there a Knox figure? You could have been giving guys grants all day with that figure.
I remember how much I hated Knox when I was a kid. Now I just think I was a tiny anti-Semite. What's he doing there? That's awful.
Oh, jeez.
It's a joke.
I saw Ghostbusters.
No, it's funny though. Is it was a totally different kind of like adult humor that I just totally wasn't into
absolutely.
I was 12. That didn't seem to fit in a Batman movie. Now I watch it, and I'm like, Knox is great. It's just like this comedian there who doesn't belong, and it's hilarious. Like he's asking for money. This guy must have been king of the Wicker People. I know more lines that Knox says than anything else. And to this day, that's the only reason. Like
king of the Wicker People.
I love Bob Wohl because of that.
He was really good in that. He was you're right. Now we're talking about Batman. Fuck it. We're gonna cut this next time. When I was a kid, I didn't like him either because he was, you know, he was dumb. He was taking up screen time. But now he's king of the Wicker People.
It'd be like if Richard Lewis showed up in the middle of Avengers. Like, what the fuck is this? Why is this happening?
A different kind of energy.
Also, I want to see that movie.
I kind of want to see it too.
I mean, you know, Harry Dean Stanton's one thing, but
oh man, you know, Paul, you might have another bit of homework.
I'm just gonna have new homework every week.
That is a good movie.
All right.
I mean, that's just like that's a really fascinating piece of cinema. I think that also happened to be a gigantic. I don't even think I like it. I mean, I loved it. I remember seeing it three times that first weekend.
Get to see it till Sunday because you couldn't get a ticket in New York City.
My shop did a thing, so I saw it like Friday, and then I saw it on Saturday and Sunday.
I had to go.
How do you remember that far back?
It was a really big deal.
All right,
I only saw it one time. But what I did do was when the trailer came out, I saw a movie twice in one day just to see the trailer again.
Do you remember the difference in the trailer and the movie?
Movie's longer.
In the trailer, the Joker says, "Where does he get those wonderful toys?" And right. In the movie, they cut the line off for some reason, and it's "Get those wonderful toys." They took out the question, and they made it into an imperative, but they did it poorly.
That's weird.
It is weird, and it always bothered me.
I'll tell you the movie I saw. I saw my mom and I went to a movie.
This is an impressive bit of memory.
In the summertime, you know, go to a matinee with your mom when you're 12, and I saw, and the Batman, and this is before, you know, you didn't know trailers were going to come out. Suddenly there's Batman.
Yeah.
And so my dad gets home from work, and I'm like, we're going to the movies. So we turned around and went back to the same exact movie. It was Dirty Rotten Scoundrels with Michael Caine and Steve Martin.
Nice.
That's the one where he shits at the table.
Yes.
I remember going to see Car 54, Where Are You, with my dad.
You've never seen that movie?
No, maybe I did once, like in the middle.
They play dueling con artists who...
I just remember he shits it or pees or something, hit the table. I have to go to the bathroom.
I saw it on Broadway with John Lithgow.
It's good. It was a funny movie, but I really literally saw it twice and went to just see the Batman trailer again. And
must have blown. See, this is that's the thing. You're going to see every goddamn thing that happens in Star Wars before you ever get a chance to. You're not going to show up and get surprised by the trailer in a theater and just blow the bracket of your brain out of your skull.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
It was a quasi-religious experience.
Oh, yeah. That summer was...
89, you know, you're 12. For me, you know, as a huge Batman fan then even, and seeing it on screen, oh, my God, it was that ridiculous. That's why I remember.
89? Okay.
I remember being confused a lot, though. Like this music's weird. And that's still the case, but now again, in retrospect, it's just oddly brilliant.
Yeah. I was five, so.
Yeah, you know, I was reading
G.I. Joe on the cusp, but I did see, you know, Batman Returns in theaters. I remember that vividly.
What are you?
Well, that's been our. Oh, wait a minute! We got a report here.
We have a
Paul,
report.
You have to report your findings on Ghostbusters.
Was Ghostbusters.
Think very carefully about this because your future this show is
you're saying
all
that Jeff Cannata is available.
I really like the line about the major appliances. I thought that was very funny, and I like the idea of the refrigerator. I guess that's linked.
I'm scratching my head to the point where I'm worried about blood coming out.
Uh huh.
Because I don't understand what you're saying.
Can we talk about the pitch perfect script that set the tone for comedy for the next 10 plus years?
Well,
God,
it's interesting. That
yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
That's a funny line too.
No, it's a fucking classic line.
It's a good line.
Flowers are still standing.
It's a good exchange. Yeah, that's a good one. I would have missed that if you hadn't shouted it out before I watched it.
Yeah. The archetypes of the three figures and then the working class Joe who comes along to work with them for an ungodly low wage, I might add. Winston said more.
It was, yeah.
It was like 11.5, and I did the math recently, and it was like he made $28,000 a year. That's not okay.
Mm-hmm.
Lenny, you would have saved the lives of millions of registered voters. I can say almost that entire movie.
Couldn't hurt. Memory.
I think there are missed opportunities for jokes. I think there are dry spells in it.
Dry spells?
They're dry spells. Like the stuff with Rick Moranis, the material isn't all that funny.
Are you kidding me?
His whole thing is about he can expense the party.
He doesn't have any friends.
Yeah.
He only has business associates. I don't know why they came.
I think it needed another draft or two.
You know, Harold Ramis is dead, right?
I know.
No, he's not. His wife is.
No, Harold Ramis is definitely dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not Rick Moranis.
He's thinking Ivan Reitman or no.
Oh, Rick Moranis' wife. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We were just talking about Lewis.
Harold Ramis co-wrote it. Yes. Ivan Reitman's quite alive.
Wow. All right.
And I felt bad for Dan Aykroyd. He didn't really get many jokes.
He wrote it.
Like he didn't write any jokes for himself. It was like he was afraid to give himself jokes. He's like, I'm gonna write some funny stuff for my friend Bill Murray.
This needs spark plugs, sparks, new brakes, new brake pads, some wiring. He did some great stuff.
They also upgrade the car too early. The car is cleaned up and has a new paint job when they're going out on their first job. That should be part of the montage of when they're successful and they're on the news. That's a nitpick.
They blew all their
but...
cash in the beginning. They were broke.
They spent too much up front.
This was the last of the petty cash. This little feast here.
I know. That's why the car should have still looked like
it's
shit when they go out
Twinkie.
On the first job. Then they get more cash coming in as they're more successful
Josh,
appearing on morning news shows.
It's a big Twinkie.
It is.
Oh, God.
This is what it's like to have kids.
Oh,
the EPA guy, that's a missed opportunity for comedy. That guy is not good.
He had no dick. That guy was a staple of 80s bad guys.
Real genius.
I like that the bad guy was like he was a member of the EPA.
That's a funny fact, but you can do something more with the character.
You know, there was no time. That wasn't the point. We needed to get to the giant marshmallow man, and we got to him. That's
a sailor
great joke.
New York.
It's on shore leave.
We get him laid, it's fine.
I'm sorry. Just all the smoke and fire reminded me of camp. I remember that reveal when I was a little kid. It kind of went over my head because they didn't really explain it.
Right.
They just cut to Ray talking about what it was. And it's so good. Don't watch Ghostbusters 2 because that's going to disappoint you. Which I loved, by the way, when I was a kid.
Sure. Vigo.
Why am I drippings with goo? Why are you living up in here when you could be living it up in California's beautiful San Fernando Valley?
Oh, Paul.
I know.
This hurts.
Don't watch Stripes because that's got some dead spots.
I've seen Stripes.
Stripes is like a precursor for this. It's not as good.
Got John Candy though.
I don't like the second. I don't like that last act.
It's weird.
John Candy was supposed to be in this movie, but he said no.
It's supposed to be John Candy, Eddie Murphy, and John Belushi.
Jesus
and Belushi
Christ.
Died. Belushi's part was taken by Bill Murray. And Candy was supposed to be Lewis. And there you go. Hmm. I'm hurting in my soul, much like thinking about Batman Forever.
Candy would have been a good Lewis.
All right. Well, let's move beyond this debacle and plug a couple of things. Oh, email. We did skip the emails. Contact@ifanboy.com is where you can email us.
She's a dog.
Voicemails 888-FANBOY-326-2697. She sleeps 3 feet above the covers.
I love when he goes to check her apartment out the first time and he completely doesn't believe anything.
No. They hate this. Just doing. He's just. He looks like a sprayer for like pesticides.
Yeah.
You doing that right? I think so. It's Bill Murray is a genius.
Yeah. Maybe you don't. You do like Bill Murray.
I do. I like Bill Murray in it.
But you like twee Wes Anderson Bill Murray.
I like most Bill Murray.
Wait, no, let's back it up now.
The correct answer is that's all Bill Murray.
Yeah, like, I was going to. Although, can I go? I'll go ahead and lodge a complaint because we're just talking about shit now. This thing where he just shows up in people's lives.
Yeah, it's getting
kind of weird, isn't it? Like, it's a little
he's
sad.
He's just doing it a lot. It was more special when it was rare. Now it's like every time I turn around, it's.
Now it's Fred Durst standing at the top of the escalator at the record store once.
Right.
It's weird.
Right.
But he's always been like that. Apparently, like back during the days of Ghostbusters, apparently, like he was so well known, he would just like he knew everybody on the street and he would like tip huge and just like live, you know, he was really friendly to everybody and that's what he was like. He was an extrovert, so I don't know, maybe that's his thing.
All right. Well, this is
clearly
a weird transition, but I want to make a quick plug for the Warner Brothers studio tours. I was given a chance to go on to the get an early look of the Batman Museum exhibit they've added to the studio tour. It begins June 26th, although you can get an early look now if you're lucky. And it runs through, I believe, the summer right now, but they're talking about extending it through November when the release of the Batman 66 DVDs come out or Blu-rays. But there's two segments. There's a museum segment with features costumes and props, and basically every costume, major costume from the Batman 89 forward. So all the Burton films and all the Nolan films and the Schumacher films, all those costumes are, or at least all the major ones, all the Batman costumes are there and all the Joker stuff. And there's a lot of props and things, very cool stuff. And I took a bunch of photos, put them on my Facebook page. If you follow me there, you'll see those photos. And then there's another room where they have a bunch of the vehicles. So you see the tumblers and the Batpod and the 89 Batmobile, which is still very cool. And
do you spell that with an E in tumbler? Or is that not?
I think Batman is originated that, didn't he? Didn't know vowels.
Yeah.
It's just BTMN.
Yeah.
Some of the vehicles from the Schumacher films. And so if you're a big Batman fan, you live in the California or Los Angeles area.
They got the Batboat?
They have, yes, they're from Schumacher, they do.
The penguins duck thing?
They have a couple of penguins.
Do they have Michael Caine there? Is Michael Caine there?
Michael Caine's there to greet you.
Like the actual penguins? Out,
also, gifts to the right.
They have some penguins. Two of the penguins, they have the blue poppy. They have Harvey Dent's coin from the Nolan films. They have the Joker's suit, which is actually very cool. Personal one Heath Ledger wore. They have the Bane, which I kept laughing every time I looked at him. The Bane costume. And it's really cool. So if you're into that stuff and you're into checking out props and costumes and everything, those are all available. The Warner Brothers Studio Tour. And in addition to that, you get the full-on tour experience, which is cool. And including
I want to see George Clooney on the left.
One of the things they told me about it was they're going to be adding things as they find them. So it's going to be a tour that is alive, as they say.
I want to be where they're looking for those things.
Well, they're going through archives and things, and they're going to be adding them as they find them. And they're hoping to add some Batman 66 stuff. They're trying to get the Batmobile for the vehicles.
The Batphone.
The Batmobile, as I remember, is just down the street on Riverside.
Yeah, but they don't own it. Yeah. So they're trying to get it. They're trying to get some of the toys to put into the museum part. So it should be cool. The one thing about the tour itself is you drive by past the courthouse, which is the outdoor set for the 66 police headquarters. Where that same shot over and over again, where the Batmobile pulls up, Batman and Robin jump out, and they run past that lady in the red dress and go up to answer the commissioner's call. Fun fact: neither one of those are the actors; those are both stunt doubles. But that's there too. So it's cool. I took photos. You can check those out. Go to Warner Brothers Studio Tours. You can find out how to get on that too. But if you're a Batman fan like I am, it's pretty cool to wander around and see all that stuff. And also a lot of the art and a lot of the art design. So there's some Anton First pieces there as well, which are cool. So head on over to iFanboy.com, comment on this show. Have you seen how the energy's come down, Josh, since Paul has revealed to us?
Yeah, I just want you to secret? Just think about it the other way. Like Paul gets off the call and he's like, how's it been lately? The guys that I work with, they keep making me watch movies from the 80s that I don't like because they're old, and that's what they liked back then, because it was before they like I'm trying to see it from your point of view, which is wrong, but I guess it's somewhat valid.
I did
valid.
Not like it. I just
it hurts.
It's like talking to one of those people who tells me that they don't get Jack Kirby. They can be beaten.
Ecto-Cooler now makes sense to me. Now that the mascot's in there. Green guy.
Oh, the light is green. The trap is clean. Light is green. Trap is clean.
I'm going to get emails, aren't I?
Two in the box. Ready to go.
I had the playset. We be fast. I watched the cartoon.
They be slow.
That's okay. We can just put them back in there. It's not a big deal. All right. Look, I'm going to blow through this. Fanboy.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/iFanboy, facebook.com/iFanboy, Jay Flanagan, CS Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter on Twitter. Leave us a review on iTunes, please. We really appreciate it if you can do that. Help spread the word. And then that's it.
That must be the most we've ever gone off the rails.
Paul, thanks for doing the show.
Yep.
It was good to have you.
Last year. Next week, Jeff. First, I got to find out what Jeff's thoughts on Ghostbusters are.
I think you'll be fine.
Across the streams.
That'd be okay, you can come back. Clean up the town.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.